All right, Mets finishing another good series against the San Diego Padres, and that's where we'll start this episode of the Shane Inning Podcast. Lots to discuss in the rotation. And Luis Rojas, even though this team, given all these injuries, seems to be overachieving, fans are still clamoring that bullpen usage and starting pitching usage is not what they'd like it to be. We'll discuss all of it. It starts right now. Welcome to the show, everybody. Doug Williams and Andy Martino with you. A reminder to subscribe to the Shane Inning Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. And Shane Inning is brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G built right for the Mets, from the network more people rely on, only on Verizon. We'll start with the three-batter rule. Mets take two out of three against San Diego Padres at home. And we will get into the loss on Sunday and the bullpen usage, why it was controversial and why maybe it shouldn't have been.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It was controversial.
So, Trevor May, by the way, Andy, just to little note, has not been used since June 6th.
That's a little odd.
A little odd, but we'll get into that. So David Peterson pitches tonight. We're recording this on Monday, and Andy, what was it, two starts ago?
I was ahead of it. That's right.
Yeah. Well, you were ahead of it because we basically asked you to, but maybe
no, I was like, that day we had this show. Go ahead. I won't even let you start the topic. You're the host. Sorry.
Let me start the topic. Are you just yelling at yourself?
Well, I'm yelling. I don't know why I'm yelling. Let's just talk about baseball. I'll back it up a little bit here.
Two starts ago for Peterson, I think it was a day game. He got roughed up. He's thrown three innings his last two starts combined. Not good. So two starts ago, right before baseball night in New York at 6, you went on the Mets Zoom to ask Rojas if he was going to get his next start. Rojas, vote of confidence, no hesitation, he will. Then he makes his next start. It goes as poorly, if not more poorly. And here he is pitching again tonight against a really good and hot Chicago Cubs team. Is this a situation, Andy, where the Mets just don't have any other options, or do they actually think this is what's best for them and the pitcher?
Probably more the former. And if you're going to pitch him, you might as well speak highly of him publicly, as Rojas is doing, to try to help him out with his confidence. They like him. Don't get me wrong. They believe in the player, but it's hard to make the argument that he's a major league pitcher at this moment. I mean, that which isn't a big statement. Like, he was a guy that could have easily started in the minor leagues this year. We're seeing him not able to command his off-speed stuff. We gave Anthony Recker credit where due when he was talking about how the command of the off-speed and the altitude in Arizona was a factor, but it's obviously now been bigger than that. Not a ton of other options. Not a huge problem when you have a top three in your rotation that's as good as the Mets. I actually think that, I mean, it's an appropriate question to ask before or after Peterson's start, but I think it's worth noting this is not a significant problem for the Mets at this point. I mean, Eichhoff, last I checked, was pitching pretty well in AAA, but not Jared Eichhoff, but not on the 40. Zipucki's not like, I don't know, he's not like someone who's necessarily going to come up and be ready to give you that much better. But no, it seems to me that Peterson doesn't, at this moment, isn't best served by being in the big leagues. It seems like he needs to work on some stuff.
Yeah, and part of what makes that so interesting is he is, and this is another thing that we talked about with you on the 6 o'clock show, he's a really important part of the Mets' future, given his years of control, given that the stuff is pretty good. He's a left-handed starter. You would think that the way organizations think, they want him to be a part of it for a long time. Is it better for him to like learn on the fly at the big league level and watch his ERA just get, you know, more and more bloated, or get sent down, which is a moment that everyone, once they think they've arrived at the big league level, never wants to see happen again. So no really good option for him other than just pitching well. And he can start by doing that tonight, but against a really good team. speaking of lefties in the Mets rotation, so Joey Lucchese, this reminds me of when sometimes you hear guys get frustrated, lefty hitters that aren't allowed to face lefty pitchers. They're like, he's a platoon guy, when in reality he's had like 40 at-bats against lefties. Maybe they haven't gone well, but you haven't given him a chance to succeed. Lucchese reminds me of that only because the argument now that he's been pitching better is like, he says he wants to stay in the game to face the lineup a third time through. The Mets and Rojas are saying, no, you didn't start the season well. They're not saying this to him. You're not the quality of pitcher that we want facing Tatis, Machado, Cronenworth, Hosmer, whoever's in the lineup, Pham, a third time through. What do you do in that situation? In that very baseball situation, Andy, where a guy wants to prove he can do something, but a team in its front office has decided it's probably not in our best interest.
Yeah, I think we're well past pitchers being able to talk their way, for the most part, deeper into games, if that's not what the analytics want them to do. And but in fairness to the way the Mets have been handling it, there was one, I'm pretty sure it was it his first start against the Padres or the previous, you know, when his first of the two, you're like, this guy's pitching great. And then it was like, rocket off the bat, fly out, line out, like, whoa, get him out of there. So perhaps he does allow harder contact when you leave him in a little longer. You want him to want it, but I don't think that's all that relevant, if at all, in decision-making. And by the way, I believe he was asked the question rather than, it's not like he went out there to give a speech about how he wanted to, you know, it was like, hey, do you want to pitch deeper into games? Well, what am I going to say? Yes, of course.
Right. I think the only counterpoint that I would make is a cautionary tale that the Mets could become, which is the team that, and we'll get more into Rojas later. I don't think any of this is his fault, but I'm just saying that the team that early in the season overmanages and uses their bullpen too much can occasionally be burned for that later on. So that means that, you know, that's a team whose bullpen is their strength in April, May, and June. And then in July, August, and September, the bullpen's exhausted. So they rely on their starting pitching. And like, you know, the strengths of teams, even the really good ones, ebb and flow. So I worry that in an example like last night, your bullpen is already tired, which is the reason that you didn't have your best guys available to you. Lucchese's pitching well. Is that an example of being like, okay, is this the best thing for tonight to leave him in or today? Probably not, but it's better than J. Rhys Familia going two innings, which means we use Trevor May. And if Familia struggles, that's going to be May for two innings. And then we don't have both guys tomorrow against the Cubs. Like, that's an example of a time where I think, looking at the long game, you're a good team. You're going to need your games in August and September. Maybe just give the guy a shot.
Yeah.
And of course, if Rojas does that, we're talking about that move on the podcast today. So
he can't win. Plus, if you don't think that he can succeed in that sixth inning a third time through, you're not really giving your bullpen a blow. What you're doing is he gives up a couple of hits and then Castro's getting ready in a hurry anyway. Right?
Castro was unavailable, but yes.
I'm saying like a Castro, you know, a reliever is getting ready. I'm saying you're making a big picture comment, which I think is a good question about the way that pitching staffs are used right now, which is like, let's get innings, let's game plan for times to the lineup, not thinking about length. Does that burn out your bullpen later? I think that's a good question and a balancing act that we'll see how it plays out. Worked for the Rays in a 60-game season. There's questions over a lengthier season. But my response to you is that, like, trying to push a starting pitcher later into the game doesn't guarantee you'll save your bullpen. Unless you're going to say, if Joey Lucchese gives up 8 runs, we're going to let him out there and wear it and have it be one of those games. If a guy's not capable of pitching a third time through, he's going to be out of there anyway, whether you're trying to leave him in or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So your bullpen's getting hot now, and it's like you're not saving those arms.
And you don't let, to your point about letting him wear it, that usually doesn't happen in the sixth or seventh.
You rarely see that.
That's a Sunday day game spot starter in the second or third, and if he's given up hit after hit after hit, you're like, you know what? It's better than let's leave him out there. That happens early in games in certain situations. It wouldn't have happened yesterday with Lucchese, but I think, again, I just keep saying it in the hopes that, not in the hope that it happens, but in the hopes that I look smart when it does happen.
That, you want to, like, put your flag in the
exactly, like, in when the relievers are, those guys that they've relied on are really struggling later in the season. I think it partially will be because of that.
It's something to watch for sure.
Something to watch. Okay, Marcus Stroman. I think part of what makes this so interesting is Zach Wheeler and his success in Philly. The contract that Wheeler signed in Philly, when I first saw it, I was like, whoa. I know you've always, not always, but since Wheeler got good post Tommy John, you've believed in the pitcher.
Oh, it's still a bigger contract than anyone expected. That was right. A good job by the agent.
Yeah. It was a good job by the agent. When I first saw it, I was like, you know what? Mets did a good job. That's too much.
Yeah.
But now, you know, if Jacob DeGrom doesn't exist, a lot of the conversation around Cy Young is probably Wheeler right now. You know, he's been their ace. And I think a lot of people are looking back on that decision not to sign him and being like, well, should the Mets have done that? You know, maybe they wouldn't have needed Stroman. And now that Stroman is here, it's like, do you not let him become the next Wheeler? Do you sign him because you need him to be the guy in your rotation for a while? Is he, we know how he's wired and we know how badly he wants to be a free agent because it didn't happen last year, Andy. Is he outpricing the team? Like, is he, every time he pitches well, going to become too much a luxury commodity?
I'm not trying to challenge you, but just to be, in fairness to Stroman, how do we know that he's really, really, it's important to him to be a free agent?
Well, I think his decision to opt out, the timing that he did it, mm-hmm. you could read into that, that he was saving himself some bullets.
Yeah. He was looking then, and he reached his service time requirement before he opted out, which obviously was duly noted by the Mets. Fair point. He was looking for, I think we've talked about this recently, but his agent was looking for multi-year deals for him with other clubs before he took the qualifying offer. So that would have meant he was willing to forego free agency. Well, that would have been a free agent deal, but, you know, he would have been willing to, say, take a 2-year deal with another team or something last winter.
Right.
I see your point, though. I don't know how it's going to the larger point, is he pricing himself out? So many things to wonder. Steve Cohen did not want to go over the luxury tax threshold this first winter. I bet you he won't, and he was willing to do it for Bauer. I bet you he's more flexible with it this time around. So it just becomes about the cash and the value. And does Sandy Alderson and Zach Scott and their group believe that this is a pitcher to commit to into his 30s? Do they believe that any pitcher is a good idea to commit to into their 30s if he starts to ask for a lot of money? With a Sandy Alderson run team, you always expect that if another club offers a huge deal, Alderson's not going to want to do that, even if he likes the player. That was his MO under a different ownership. So there are a lot of variables here, but that's also his personal value system. So that's something to remember. We'll see. We'll also see if there is a lockout on free agency. I hate to keep bringing this up, but there seriously might be no free agency, which will then a bunch of players will be scrambling to sign when they let them back in March or something. I don't know. So there's a lot that makes this especially hard to predict.
Yeah. And to your original question, I don't know why I've kind of convinced myself that Stroman was looking forward to free agency. I mean, I'd like to think that he's been quoted somewhere along the line and I've been looking for it. Can't seem to find it specifically. I do remember on Twitter, somebody said basically that, you know, what you should do is accept a qualifying offer. This was before it was offered. Accept a qualifying offer and prove yourself again with the Mets and then do this all again in a year. And he was like, I'm glad you're not my agent or something like that. And then he ended up kind of doing that exact thing. I just think the way that he believes in himself, his level of self-confidence, the fact that he's kind of almost manifested the year that he's currently having. I know that he believes that he's been this pitcher for a long time. And now that he's pitching like that guy that he says he's been throughout the last couple of years, mm-hmm. even when we haven't seen the results, the fact that it's here, I know the guy's going to want to get paid for it. I mean, yeah, that's just obviously, human nature.
We both agree he should.
Right.
And if the Mets don't step up to the extent that another team does, he should obviously take the other team's offer.
Right.
So yeah, that could happen. But again, I can't emphasize enough how much there's just an industry bracing for free agency not happening this November.
Yeah. I mean, I, by the way, when you say, I hate to keep bringing that up, I don't think you're bringing it up too much. I don't think you've brought it up in those terms on the podcast. It's just a good reminder. That's all. Yeah. I mean, it's like,
well, yeah. Unfortunately, there's a expectation that a lockout could definitely happen, and that means free agency is shut down, no winter meetings. And it's the last thing anyone needs, whether you participate in or cover the industry or root for it, get after the pandemic. But you know, it could happen.
All right, so that's Peterson, Lucchese, and Stroman, an all-rotation edition of the three-batter rule. Once again, you're listening to Shane Inning Podcast. It's brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G, built right for the Mets from the network. More people rely on only on Verizon. We have a bit of an on-paper rant from our producer, Jeff, who, as I said before the podcast, needs to get in the habit of, I don't know whether it's calling into radio shows. Sometimes when I get angry about something, I write a long scathing email and then I just let it sit in my inbox. And then when I cool down, I delete it to nobody. Like, it's just a way to put pen to paper. I'm not a big handwriting guy.
If you're mad at me, do you write me an email that you know you're never going to send? Or are you literally just writing drafts like of things you want to rant about? Are they directed to a person?
I mean, I guess sometimes they've been directed to a person. I don't think it's never happened with you. It would be more like something personal where somebody in your life pisses you off and you know that the best thing to do is to shut up, but you want to live in a world briefly while you're angry that you wouldn't just shut up and you'd put all your feelings down and send them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good way to draft something, but that's what Jeff should do. I know he's going to cut all of this, but anyway, he writes, innings everywhere. There's a lot of talk about pitchers' usage, pulling starters early, holding back relievers. Can we please talk about the incredible 2020/2021 inning increases that pitchers face and a lot of the injuries, the run of injuries throughout Major League Baseball, especially if you're hoping to play in October? Must play the long game, even if it costs you some regular season games. Well,
okay.
I made that point earlier, Jeff. So I guess I tend to agree with you. But Andy, I don't imagine that, and I'm not trying to oversimplify this, but managers talk to front offices before games. You know, you've made this point that they all have their lanes every night. I guarantee you that those meetings before games are not about, yeah, we're going to need Castro in May and Loop more on August 3rd. Than we will tonight. No. So don't use them. So how does the conversation that we're having just as lay people actually manifest itself in the room where it happens with the real smart people who make these decisions?
I can tell you more how this works with the Yankees than with the Mets, because the Mets group is still sort of forming in season as they make all these new hires and all that kind of stuff. But like, it's like you're right. It's not long range. Like, it's long range in the sense that they try to give guys regular rest through the year. And, you know, if you pitch multiple innings, that then you're down that number of days. And they try not to go three in a row for some guys or two in a row for other guys, all that stuff. That's the way they think about August 4th. But they just think, like, these are the lanes for these pitchers that could come up in these game situations based on data of them versus particular matchups and parts of the lineup. And then it's up to the manager to actually do it and execute. And that's where a manager still, it's collaborative, still deserves praise/blame, depending on how it plays out. It's not it's not the front office saying, leave Familia in for a batter. That's Rojas has gotten the moment still. So that's what's left up to the manager. They're given options and information and then expected to execute in the moment in a way that, is both consistent with that information and then like reads the moment. You know, it's a really good example, not just a small tangent on this. A really good example of a manager in a data-centric organization still being able to use his eyes and his gut was when in the 2017 World Series at the end, when Hinch left Lance McCullers in. No, Charlie Morton in the World Series. It was McCullers against the Yankees in the ALCS. And it's like, he's throwing great. He's throwing his breaking ball over and over and over again. This isn't the way we planned it out. It's working. Leave it in. That's still like they got all that information. He got all that information with lanes, I guarantee you, and then just kind of went with it. Manager still has that kind of power because the GM's not in the dugout.
And the other part of what Jeff's talking about is the injuries. Now, neither of us being doctors, you know, I don't think we'd be able to credibly say that injuries are caused by this. I think we could have predicted that this would happen given the uncertainty of last year and what it might have meant. Now, one point that you did make going into this season was that there was some thought in Major League Baseball that the teams that pitched deep in October last year were actually better off with the health of their pitching because they got closer to a normal season. But one point that I'd want to make is something that we were also talking about right before we started recording. So Jacob DeGrom, by saying that he kind of does these tests, and I pictured him doing this. Now our audience can't hear it, but he was doing basically ligament tests in his elbow. Yeah, he called them like, you know, ligament tests, at-home tests, basically, because he knows what it feels like to pitch with a partially torn UCL, which is part of what DeGrom said after his last start. And this is not that. Yep. Now, in my opinion, listening to DeGrom, I had total confidence in him saying that. Now, he might, you know, blow his arm out in a couple of weeks and I'll look like an idiot. But when he did say that, just knowing the pitcher and the way he's wired, the person, I believe that DeGrom has his own health and best interest in mind. He is not the type to refuse the right treatment to try and pitch his way through the pain. He's not wired that way. So that is a good thing. And that probably is what would save more pitchers from these injuries than trying to be the tough guy and pitch. Do you think that DeGrom is a rarity or are more pitchers like him than we think?
Oh, more pitchers like them than we think. They all want to come out of the game when they're not 100%. And that's not a criticism. I'm being a little facetious, but this is how the vast majority operate. I'll tell you what I will criticize is the certain type of sports fan that needs to somehow create a personality, like fill a Jacob DeGrom with a fake personality, which is he's a warrior. He's not coming out of the game. He'll pitch until his arm falls off. You're not getting the ball out of his hands. And the real Jacob DeGrom's like, no, I was tired. So I told Louie to get me after six. And you're like, well, that's smart. I'm not sure why it's valued to be stupid and pitch longer if you're not feeling it. But DeGrom's a guy that needs to be close to 100% to pitch. And as he should be, he's too valuable. So to risk otherwise. So was that your question?
Well, I mean, it was kind of my question and kind of an answer, more so just kind of a rant. But
did you just wanted to just be a little point guard there and team?
No, I was talking about you. That was kind of a rant on your part.
Yeah, I did rant about that because I don't understand. I think people need to look deep into themselves to figure out why it's so important to them that like being tough guy like matters so much. Like DeGrom's actually intelligent. Isn't that better? About this.
Well, I mean, and to your point, DeGrom was pitching hurt. Like I said before the podcast that at one point he threw a 97 mile an hour fastball. I was like, uh-oh. And he looked, took a deep breath and looked into the dugout in his last inning. He was like, I think he might be hurt. And he's still dominating a really good team. Yeah. And at that point, like anytime he might give up a run, it feels shocking. And I'm sure it's more shocking for him than for us. So when somebody even hits a ball to the warning track, he's like, man, what did I do wrong there? So if you're that perfect, it's because you're listening to your body. Like he's not making dumb decisions and staying out there when he doesn't need to. And his mechanics are out of whack. He's listening. And he went on the injured list with the side tightness, even though the MRI was clean, because he knew that something was wrong. The reason he's so perfect is because he's listening to himself. So like,
and this is typical of pitchers nowadays. They will go out there if they're 100%. Otherwise, they probably won't.
Right.
Nationals fans do this with Max Scherzer, I've noticed. Mad Max. He's crazy. You can't get him out of the game. Meanwhile, he's like, you know, my back hurts or my groin hurts, so I think I should probably leave the game. It's this weird thing, like reality versus fantasy thing that happens.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move to up-downs. And again, I'm going to give you a chance to rant. Okay. So Luis Rojas, I'll rant first. I'm not sure what managers today are popular with their fan base, specifically on Twitter, because that's the only way that on my couch at night I hear from fans, right? So what manager is known to be a great manager? Alex Cora? Oh,
I don't think any team. Well, right now Boston fans love Alex Cora, but they won on a losing streak. It's right. There's no way for a manager to Bob be popular Melvin. In season.
Okay, so I don't know what they're supposed to do, because you can paint any decision as damned if you do, damned if you don't. Okay, were you upset that Joey Lucchese came out of the game? You'd be upset if he gave up a hit and a walk and Rojas left him in too long. Like, there's just no – we talk about lanes for pitchers. Lanes for managers are – they're both dead ends. So look at the record. Don't get so lost in every night or every game where you're like, what's going on? I mean, Jose Peraza is getting the biggest hits for the Mets, and they're 7 games over .500, and they're in first place. So it's just like, I don't know enough about Rojas. I don't know as much as you do about the way he's viewed and also just generally his personality. But it just seems like, I don't know if he's Casey Stengel, but he's doing well. And the players clearly like him, and the team's doing well in a situation where maybe they shouldn't even be. He seems like a very good steward for the organization. What do you think?
I guarantee you that if Casey Stengel had managed with that level of real-time scrutiny, it would have been the same thing. I think I'm not trying to make the point that managers are above criticism. They're not. But yeah, I mean, I hesitate to even engage online criticism of Rojas. It's very obvious that he's a leading contender for National League Manager of the Year on merit, period. I think that the leading in Familia for one batter too long was a result of a lack of guys being available. It was a result of, in fairness, some of the things, like if the front office has had a critique of him that I've picked up on this season, it's been at times using the wrong reliever, not using your best reliever in a spot where you should, things like that. They've also felt that he's gotten better at it as the years gone by. The low point of that was probably the series in Tampa Bay. And it's been better since. That's a little information for how they view him. So it's not like he's beyond reproach, but there's a reason I don't follow anybody on Twitter. I actually don't even know what you're talking about. I don't see it. And that's why, because it's not valuable.
Well, I think part of what gets me fired up is there's a segment of Mets fandom that I think is like, he lacks feel. He doesn't have a clue about relievers and who's right and which situation, and he overmanages and stuff. And it's like, I just have a feeling that that's kind of a you problem.
Yeah, that's another way to put it. Yeah,
it's a you problem. Like, you think that because maybe the game was managed differently 15 to 50 years ago that like this guy doesn't have a clue. But also, like, sometimes I see a shot of Rojas or any manager for that matter in the dugout, and I'm like, God, what an exhausting job. Like,
yeah,
we're just watching like each pitch being like, oh, that was a nasty pitch. Or, oh, that was a ball. Oh, I thought that was a strike. Oh, who's up next? Like, that's how we watch games for him. It's like, he's got information. He knows who's available. He's got a double switch. Like, and again, people listening to this, old baseball people will probably be like, yeah, that's the job. Like, it's not.
Which it is. And he makes a lot of money.
Yeah, he makes a lot of money. It's a difficult job. Sure. Yeah. But like, to say that it's so easy and he's just screwing it up, is like, why do you think your team is good? It's not just DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker, it's the fact that, like, when somebody gets a hit in the three hole, he put them there.
Yeah.
Like, it's, well, he helps. He helps. He doesn't hurt. He helps.
I agree. And sometimes he hurts them. I mean, sometimes he makes a bad move. Overall, on balance, though, it's obviously good. And you know, like, we were consistently critical of Mickey Callaway's in-game moves. I think part of our job is to watch really closely and ask pertinent questions, like mine and yours' job. And if a guy isn't good or isn't doing a good job, to be, you know, obviously be willing to make that point. It's just obviously the on-balance of the Rojas, it's been going well. We agree. And I just think that real-time criticism comes from – I'm going to be not critical of the Twitter people in this sense. Like, that stuff comes from passion. It comes from knowledge of the game. It comes from being like living and dying on every pitch, all the things that baseball and the Mets need you to be. It's great. It's better than radio silence on a baseball game.
It is. It's different though to say that was a bad move by Rojas, because he does make bad moves. Everybody does. Than to say this guy doesn't have a clue. He's just so tone deaf to like players' needs and who's right for each situation, which,
well, yeah, that's ignorant if someone were to say that. Yeah, right. I agree.
I guess, I don't know. I just think it's a really hard job, and to try and paint somebody with that broad a brush just doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, and I even try to be careful. I find it really interesting to dig into in-game stuff. It's probably my favorite way to write about the sport, is to do something really hyper-focused on a moment in a game or a play or a decision. I love that stuff personally. But I actually have to be careful too to not get too like, well, why didn't you pinch run there? Or why didn't you do that or that? Because it does get a little too, like, you can lose the forest for the trees.
Very good point. With Rojas and a manager who's capable of doing the job, correct. When Mickey Callaway accidentally puts a pitcher in the game before they announce who's coming up for the Phillies, and you realize this guy actually has no idea what he's doing, and lacks the ability to manage a baseball team, then you can ask, hey, Mickey, just out of curiosity, why didn't you pinch run there? Because in the back of your head, you're thinking, I think maybe he just forgot. I'm saying that questioning moves that closely, that specifically, probably is a way to signify whether or not you actually believe that the manager knows what he's doing.
And also, that's a good point, and a separate point that just occurred to me. I think that's a really important one. It's actually about fairness to the manager, because if you're a reporter, it's not fair to criticize him without asking and making sure. An example of that would be the Nationals were in the playoffs one year. I'm covering them. Jordan Zimmerman's pitching great in the eighth inning. Matt Williams takes him out. The Cardinals tie the game. The Cardinals win it in extra innings. And it's like, Matt Williams just made the blunder of the year, I think. So I ask him in the press conference face to face, like a, you know, professional, was Zimmerman getting tired? Did you see signs there? Was there something we didn't see? And he's like, nope, that was whoever's inning, the eighth. And then it's like, all right, rip him.
He's just bad. He's a bad manager. Yeah.
But you ask the question, actually, to be fair, given the chance to explain. That's different from just like tweeting like moron, seventh inning, you're a moron, eighth inning, you're a moron. It's, you see the difference there.
Okay, quickly, the down version of the up down. Dom Smith's struggles continue. I mean, generally, he's been better in the second half of this season so far. But I love talking to Keith about this stuff, Andy, because he's so good at reminding you that the most important thing in baseball is proof of success. Uh-huh. So last year with Pete, Keith was good at being like, could have a sophomore slump. Like, just remember that he hasn't done it many, many years. So he might struggle. Yeah. And last year with Dom, he was important. It was a reminder and be like, well, Pete might be the guy next year. Like, you just don't know. Generally speaking, do you think Dom Smith is still viewed as one of the Mets' better hitters and viewed as a guy who's going to come out of it?
Yeah. I think that he seems to be going through it in ways that are testing him. I mean, he's been even a little bit prickly in Zoom conferences and stuff, which is different, and people have noticed that. Obviously, very solid person, solid to more than solid baseball player. You know, there were questions about him from evaluators that I talked to going into the year, like, is he the bench player he was, or is he the star of a 60-game season? So I think there's still more of that to be discovered. Keith's right. He doesn't have that whole track record that gives him that benefit of the doubt.
Since the start of May, 254 hitter. You know, there's more stats than that that are even more troubling, but you know, that's not horrific. Mm-hmm. It's not where he was, which was right at 200, but the power, the breaking ball hitter, there's some troubling things there. And you know, I can't help but wonder that, you know, becoming a solid left fielder, which is an accomplishment, has taken away some of his focus.
To mention, in fairness to him, because he was so eloquent last year in a big moment, he's kind of become someone who outlets like beyond beat writers go to when there's like something big happening in the world too. And I think that that's a burden to carry that he doesn't necessarily deserve and has been an extra thing in his life over the past year. I wouldn't discount that.
You think that's something that's actually affected him this year?
I don't want to speculate on being in his mind in that way, but as a young man who's just trying to establish himself in the big leagues, who organically became a voice of something bigger, that's tough to ask him to be that voice on demand. So I feel sympathy for him on that.
All right. Just a reminder, you've been listening to the Shane Anything podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. And another reminder that Shane Anything is brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G built right for the Mets from the network more people rely on. It's only on Verizon. Andy, thank you. We will talk to you later this week, everybody. Thank you, as always, for listening.